This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Upping the Ante in Iraq and Iran. Four in ten Americans predict war with Iran. This is the result of a poll taken by Ipsos Public Affairs and released by the Associated Press January 4th. 40% of respondents think it is likely that the U.S. will go to war with Iran. This is occurring 5 years after President Bush declared that Iran was part of the Axis of Evil. And his State of the Union address in 2002 was preceded by the document Rebuilding America's Defenses, or the RAD, the R-A-D, that had been prepared by a group of Bush supporters, including Paul Wolfowitz, Stephen Cambone, I. Scoot Libby, and others. It was prepared before the Bush campaign of 2000, and in it, it stated, the current American peace will be short-lived if the United States becomes vulnerable to rogue powers with small, inexpensive arsenals of ballistic missiles and nuclear warheads or other weapons of mass destruction. We cannot allow North Korea, Iran, Iraq, or similar states to undermine American leadership, intimidate American allies, or threaten the American homeland itself. In other words, the setting up of an axis of evil, North Korea, Iran, Iraq, the faking, the forgery of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, leading to the devastation of that nation. And now, for years on end, the lies about Iran as a nuclear, as setting up to be a nuclear power with nuclear weapons. Ralph?
Maya, this takes place in a very particular historical context and class context. And as we have documented in the Hidden History of Zionism and Iraq and Kuwait, a history suppressed, all wings of the ruling class, that is to say neocons and Zionist stooges, as well as the so-called Eastern capital sector of the class, have been on board for expansion of imperial reach and for the direct seizure of Middle Eastern oil, as well as the fragmentation of each country ad seriatim. The seminal document by Oded Yinon, the Mossad operative, called A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s, became, in fact, the blueprint for the replacement of the Soviet Union and the menace of communism with the category of terror. And all of this takes place in that context, from the contrivance of 9/11, the inside job that was to provide the rationale for this entire World War IV scenario. And now, in the aftermath of catastrophic disaster and defeat in Iraq, they're scrambling to place blame and point the finger. Here you have the spectacle of the likes of Jimmy Carter writing a book about the Zionist lobby and the Zionist state. The same Jimmy Carter who is the author of Secret Plan PD-18 was for an operational strike force of a minimum of 100,000 people to seize oil direct. Here you have the spectacle of the Bush senior clan with Baker and with Scowcroft and with the so-called study group of Democrat Hamilton and Baker and Leon Panetta, who was the chief of staff of none other than Clinton, the very people who were, in fact, the architects of not only the Gulf War, but of the entire scenario for direct seizure of Middle Eastern oil. That's the context, that's the backdrop, that's the preparation for the next phase. In fact, it's a four-phase operation because, as Paul Craig Roberts correctly pointed out, they're at war on four fronts. They're engaged now and they've invaded Somalia. They're in full-scale occupation and devastation of Afghanistan. They have been targeting Iran. It's not just a question of the nuclear strike, which they keep talking about since 2005. They have had special forces in the field in Iran. They have been sabotaging and assassinating and death squad operating in Iran now for at least a decade. All wings of the class, not just the Zionist wing.
Ralph, speaking of oil in Iran, Iran is the third in terms of nations with crude oil reserves. As of 2006, Saudi Arabia had 266.8 billion barrels of proven reserves, Canada 178.8 billion barrels of proven reserves, and Iran is third in place with 132.5 billion barrels, half of what Saudi Arabia has as proven reserves. And remember, these are only the proven reserves, still third, with Iraq following with 115 billion barrels of proven reserves, and Kuwait in fifth place with 104 billion barrels. And in terms of being the top exporters, in 2005, Iran was in fourth place, following Saudi Arabia, Russia, Norway, and then Iran. Not much, a quarter of the amount of the millions of barrels per day exported by Saudi Arabia, still an enormous amount, 2.6 million barrels of oil per day exported by Iran. So Iran is, in terms of energy production and energy resources, a major, major player in the world today and in the days to come. And this is of a great interest to the United States in the quest to have hegemony over resources throughout the world. Let's look at some of the things that have been taking place in the last few days that demonstrate upping the ante against the strike against Iran, aside from the UN resolution imposing sanctions, partial sanctions on Iran, and there have been longstanding U.S. sanctions against Iran. Ralph?
Yes, Maya, I think it's essential that we do that, but I want to contextualize this, because there is a drumbeat of discovery that the AIPAC and the Zionist lobby and the Israeli state are a critical element in the strategies now of late capital and of imperialism, as if this is something new. Of course, the assumption is being made, and it's an easy assumption and it's a false one, that somehow the Zionist state has the capture of the $10 trillion imperialist state in its hands. And that is an absurd proposition, in the sense that the wings of the class that are servicing the Zionist apparatus do so as its sponsor, do so because it is the indispensable component of imperial reach. And it's just, I think, important for us to understand that you mention Iran. 1953, Dwight Eisenhower, who was warning about the military-industrial complex, engineering the putsch in Iran, installing the Shah of Iran, eliminating Mossadegh and the nationalist government of Iran, seizing again through the Shah the oil resources of Iran, which had been nationalized by Mossadegh. Every single administration since that 1953 event. And I would like, just before we enter into the discussion about the proposed and pending and promised nuclear strikes, August 25th, 1977, Jimmy Carter issues a secret presidential directive called PD-18, for the preparation of a strike force, rapid intervention in the Middle East, especially, quote, in the oil-producing areas of the Gulf. 1978, Admiral Thomas Moore, chairperson of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, deployment of carriers, the very carriers we're now discussing with respect to Iran, two Air Force carriers to the Arabian Sea for conducting exercises inside the Gulf. This is not, as it were, a recent discovery. Look, the Brookings Institute documented that the, our cell phone interrupting us there, that between 1946 and 1975, force interventions, the Defense Department's advanced research projects, 215 military interventions in which the armed forces were used for specific political objectives. The United States threatened to use strategic nuclear weapons 19 times during that period. This is not new. U.S. armed forces intervention were an average of 7.2 times a year between 1946 and 1975. Once a month between 1956 and 1965. This is the ruling class, brothers and sisters. It's not one wing of the ruling class. It's not one faction of the ruling class. Indeed, in fact, I want to point out that a young man named Benjamin Netanyahu, 1979, with the sponsorship of who? George Bush Sr. and his Secretary of State George Shultz, organizes an international conference on terrorism. And again in 1984, with the whole panoply of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the, all of the American Enterprise Institute and the neocons in tow with Shultz and Bush Sr. in Washington in 1984. It's a ruling class that has stratagems that they share. The devastation in Iran and in Iraq, the devastation in particular in Iraq with the Gulf War, was a little anticipation of what we are witnessing today. Of course they're promising to nuke Tehran. When have they not?
To go on to nuking Tehran, the London Sunday Times, January 7th, 2007, revealed Israel plans nuclear strike on Iran. Uzi Manemi in New York and Sarah Baxter in Washington. The Times reports, Israel has drawn up secret plans to destroy Iran's uranium enrichment facilities with tactical nuclear weapons. Two Israeli Air Force squadrons are training to blow up an Iranian facility using low-yield nuclear bunker busters, according to several Israeli military sources. The Israeli weapons would each have a force equivalent to 1/15 of the Hiroshima bomb. That is, the bombs dropped by the United States in 1945 on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Under the plans, conventional laser-guided bombs would open, quote, tunnels into the targets. The mini-nukes would then immediately be fired into a plant at Natanz, exploding deep underground to reduce the risk of radioactive fallout. Nonetheless, there would be radioactive fallout. As soon as the green light is given, it will be one mission, one strike, and the Iranian nuclear project will be demolished, said one of the sources to the Sunday Times. The plans disclosed to the Sunday Times the week before, that is, at the very beginning of January, were prompted in part by Israeli intelligence services Mossad's assessment that Iran is on the verge of producing enough enriched uranium to make nuclear weapons within 2 years. Israeli military commanders believe that conventional strikes may no longer be enough to annihilate increasingly well-defended enrichment facilities. What the Times is referring here is to the plans and the testing that the Israelis have done for a conventional military bombing strike on Iran that we have reported over and again over the past few years on Taking Aim. Several have been built, that is, several of the enrichment facilities, according to the Mossad, have been built at least 70 feet, with 70 feet of concrete and rock, that is beneath, well beneath the ground. However, the nuclear-tipped bunker busters will be used if a conventional attack is ruled out and if the United States, notes the Times, declines to intervene. The Israeli and American officials have met several times to consider military action. Military analysts said the disclosure of the plans could be intended to put pressure on Tehran to halt enrichment, to cajole America into action, or soften up world opinion in advance of the Israeli attack. And the Times is explicit about the targets. Natanz, where thousands of centrifuges supposedly are being installed for uranium enrichment. and a uranium conversion facility near Isfahan, where, according to a statement by an Iranian vice president last week, 250 tons of gas for the enrichment process have been stored in tunnels, and also a heavy water reactor at Iraq, which may in the future produce enough plutonium for a bomb. Remember, this is all hypothetical. The Times reports that according to its sources, Israeli pilots have flown to Gibraltar in recent weeks to train for the 2,000-mile round trip to the Iranian targets. Three possible routes have been mapped out, including one over Turkey. As soon as the Times released this report, and this is a report that's very similar to reports that were released in the beginning of 2006 and 2005 about Israeli strikes against Iran, the Israeli Foreign Ministry quickly denied the report. The Foreign Ministry spokesman Mark Regev denied the report and said that, quote, the focus of the Israeli activity today is to give full support to diplomatic actions and the implementation of a UN Security Council resolution imposing sanctions on Iran. Now, that was reported by Maddie Friedman of the AP. The AP, the Associated Press, also spoke to the Israeli army, but the army declined to comment. And the AP also spoke to the Prime Minister's office, Ehud Olmert, but the Prime Minister's office declined to comment. The Israeli Minister of Strategic Threats, Avigdor Lieberman, also declined to comment on the Sunday Times report. Ralph?
Well, I think we have to point out, Maya, that Prime Minister Olmert of Israel had, in declining to comment, was virtually giving a sanction to the report, because we have to keep in mind that it is but a couple of days since Prime Minister Olmert made reference to Israel's nuclear capacity and nuclear weaponry. The first time in the history of the Zionist state that they formally acknowledged that they had a nuclear capacity and will to use it, and that's not just a slip of the tongue. I think also we should keep in mind that it's the kind of denial where they actually refuse comment, and followed the very next day by Eric Silver in Jerusalem. A report that was published in The Independent, military strike is the only way to stop Iran, says the top Israeli strategist. The top Israeli strategic analyst stated that armed force is the only way to stop Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. Zvi Staub, a director of Tel Aviv University's Institute for National Security Studies, spoke last night after the foreign minister commented on the report in the Sunday Times. Indeed, the foreign ministry spokesperson was in a way contradicted, because Stauber said, experience shows it is very hard to stop a state determined to build nuclear weapons. And that is amplified by the report in Yedioth Aharonot, in which they cite former General Oded Tira, who is nothing if not explicit. He lays out the necessity for a nuclear strike on Iran, and he has an entire analysis of this. He says, on the Eastern Front, the Americans are on their way out of Iraq. Finally, Iran will continue to pursue its nuclear program while the world continues to babble. Instead of allotting months for diplomatic activity and preparing for a military strike on Iran's nuclear infrastructure, the world continues to talk nonsense and play with illusions. Bush lacks the political power to attack Iran. An American strike in Iran is essential for our existence, and we will help pave the way. We will lobby the Democratic Party and U.S. newspaper editors in order to turn the Iranian issue into a bipartisan one unrelated to the Iraq failure. He might have added that he's pushing on an open door, because it is the brother of John Kerry, Cameron Kerry, during the presidential electoral campaign, who showed up in Tel Aviv to tell Sharon that Kerry favored a preemptive nuclear strike on Tehran, quickly echoed by the liberal illusionist, the figure in whom so many of our so-called anti-war figures the larger arena have illusion, Barack Obama calling for preemptive nuclear strike on Tehran.
Ralph Tira, who is the former Israeli Defense Force chief artillery officer, was explicit in that he should, quote, turn to Hillary Clinton and other potential presidential candidates in the Democratic Party. So they support immediate action by Bush against Iran. Then there's been a drumbeat because on January 2nd, Haaretz reported that the Israeli think tank, the Institute for National Strategic Studies at Tel Aviv University, which is foremost in the militarist push for the Zionist state, that the think tank in the title of the article by Amos Harrell said Israel could attack Iran's nuclear program alone. The Institute for National Strategic Studies at Tel Aviv University stated in its annual report that was released at the beginning of January, time is working in Iran's favor, and barring military action, Iran's possession of nuclear weapons is only a matter of time. Only a matter of time. This has been the drumbeat year after year. The INS think tank stopped short of calling for an Israeli military strike to curb Tehran's nuclear ambitions, according to the article. However, the INS head, Zvi Stauber, a retired general who also served as Israel's ambassador in London and is the senior policy advisor to former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, said Israel was, quote, technically capable of striking alone and would have to do so if it takes action because no other country would agree to work openly with Israel. In other words, the Israelis have said to the United States clearly, explicitly, time and again, we are going to strike Iran, just as the Israelis in 1981 took out the potential nuclear facility in Iraq at Osirak.
Well, Maya, that was done with full sanction by the United States, and it's very clear what we have going on here. Here is a member of the Institute's board, Brigadier General Giora Eland. There will not be a military strike without, quote, full strategic and military understanding with the United States. Even if Israeli jets are the ones that execute this attack, it will be perceived, and rightly so, as a clear understanding between the United States and Israel. There is no ambiguity about what we have going on here. Imperialism, utilizing the Zionist state, is carrying out a strategic objective that they themselves are intending. And indeed, we should cite that the Brigadier General Oded Tira is quite explicit. He's already describing the use of Azerbaijan's air bases for the strike against Iran, and he reveals that they are agitating amongst the Azeri minority in Iran. I don't mean just agitating, but they have commando forces on the ground with reference to these preparations. General Tira did not realize the report in the Today Azi, which is an Azeri publication, that President Bush has become the most deeply unpopular president in American history. And indeed, in that context, the Israelis are going to take the first step with the understanding of the United States and the Democratic Party and the Democratic leadership and Hillary Clinton and a Barack Obama and the brother of John Kerry and the whole nine yards. Let's have no illusions about what is at work here. This is a ruling class agenda, and indeed they may balk at a particular tactical indicator. They may consider that the plans for a preemptive nuclear strike on Iran are a provocation. But they are not objecting to the dispatch of the aircraft carriers to the Persian Gulf with the capacity to implement the support apparatus for the Zionist attack and the coordination with the United States. United States.
Ralph, as you mentioned before, these are long-standing plans on the part of Israel, but also on the part of the United States. As was reported in 2005, in July of 2005, in the publication The American Conservative, the Pentagon, acting under instructions from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, has tasked the United States Strategic Command, that's STRATCOM, with drawing up a contingency plan for a large-scale air assault on Iran, employing both conventional and tactical nuclear weapons. Within Iran, there are more than 450 major strategic targets, according to the article, including numerous suspected nuclear weapons program development sites. Many of the targets are hardened or are deep underground and could not be taken out by conventional weapons, hence the nuclear option. As in the case of Iraq, the response is not conditional on Iran actually being involved in any act of terrorism directed against the United States. Several senior Air Force officers involved in the planning are reportedly appalled at the implications of what they are doing. However, Iran is being set up for an unprovoked nuclear attack, and no one is prepared to damage his career by posing any objections. And this dates back to 2005. Again, later in 2006, there were many articles, particularly in the European press, at the end of 2005, December 30th, led to articles in the beginning of 2006. The German magazine Der Spiegel had many articles with reports of Udo Ulfkot of the news agency DDP. Ulfkot is supposedly very close to unnamed Western security sources. And over and again, he has written in the German publications about what security sources. In other words, he is the conduit for leaks, in much the way Seymour Hersh in the United States becomes a conduit for reports from the CIA. Ulfkot wrote that a possible airstrike was discussed during a recent meeting between the CIA director, Porter Goss, the then CIA director, and the Turkish Prime Minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Der Spiegel wrote, quote, Goss is said to have asked Turkey to provide unfettered exchange of intelligence that could help with the mission. DDP also reported that the governments of Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Oman, and Pakistan have been informed in recent weeks of Washington's military plans. And what they're talking about are military plans for a strike against Iran.
Well, Maya, I think, again, if you look carefully at this apparatus, please keep in mind that the 1979 conference in Tel Aviv on terrorism that was organized by Netanyahu as an operative of the Central Intelligence Agency, as was reported in the Israeli publication Hayir at the time. He had four Social Security cards: Benjamin Netanyahu, Benjamin Netai, John J. Sullivan, and John J. Sullivan Jr. The Jerusalem Post would later attempt to suggest that the John J. Sullivan was not the same person as Benjamin Netanyahu. What they didn't disclose is they simply used the names. Didn't mean that they was the individual. They deployed the identity in the course of the cover operation of Netanyahu. But keep in mind, the Netanyahu Conference on Terror, with a literal who's who of the people who now, Scott Ritter, Jimmy Carter, and Paul Craig Roberts, and any number of people are fingering as the control of AIPAC and the Zionist lobby. Indeed, the AIPAC and Zionist lobby is hegemonic. But who was attending the conference? It's not just the entire apparatus, Michael Ledeen, Douglas Feith, the neocons, but it is Bush Sr. It is George Shultz of Bechtel. The Bechtel Corporation does all its business in Saudi Arabia. It is the entire apparatus of the ruling class that's involved in creating the category of terror, the stratagem of preemptive strike, the rationale for attacking on the basis of a so-called terror danger. They set the stage for what they would later do with 9/11, All of this in the apparatus that the Zionists were deployed to implement on behalf of imperialism. They are the cat's paw, the instrument. They may be attached to a particular wing of the class, but all wings of the class have been involved in preparation for direct seizure of Arab oil. Netanyahu's record, all roads lead to Bush Sr. and to Schultz, not just the so-called neocons. This is a confluence, and those who have illusions about the Democrats, who were promising us before the last congressional election, oh, would the Democrats come in, they'll have control over Congress and they'll wind down this war. We see exactly what's afoot.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Upping the Ante in Iraq and Iran. I'd like to point out that in Scott Ritter's recent book, Target Iran, The Truth About the White House's Plans for Regime Change, he goes through chapter and verse the work of the international agency that monitors nuclear matters, and Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Agreement, something that Israel is not a signatory to, Israel denying over and again until Olmert's recent leak that it had nuclear weapons. And what Scott Ritter points out near the in his conclusion is that the supposed conflict is based upon an Israeli contention that Iran poses a threat to Israel and defined by Israeli assertions that Iran possesses a nuclear weapons program. None of this, Ritter remarks, has been shown to be true. And he goes through, as I said, each of the an analysis of the investigations in Iran, the imposition on Iran time and again of exploring all its nuclear facilities. And he says the defined by Israeli assertions that Iran possesses a nuclear weapons program. Again, I remark, none of this has been shown to be true. And indeed, much of the allegations made by Israel against Iran have been clearly demonstrated as being false. And yet the United States considers to trumpet the Israeli claims, and no individual more loudly than the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, that is the former U.S. ambassador. Bolton's pro-Israeli stance has elicited absurdly disturbing marks by the Israeli themselves that bring into question the objectivity of Mr. Bolton when it comes to representing American vice Israeli interests. Now, we should also mention that Ritter is writing this book from a definite perspective. And he states in the beginning of the book and also in his conclusion what his perspective is. And I quote again, "As someone who has placed my life on the line in defense of Israel, I have a vested interest in the continued existence of the state of Israel, free of tyranny and oppression. I am a true friend of Israel, a status that goes far beyond simple hyperbole and rhetoric and is instead backed up with sweat and deeds." So Scott Ritter does not understand any bit the history of the formation of the Zionist state, the role of the Zionist state as a conduit for imperial policy, as the linchpin of imperialist policy in the Middle East, and what a struggle of resistance of the peoples of the Middle East, particularly the Palestinians, for their right of self-determination, how this has played into the, as you might say, the geopolitics of the region.
Well, Maya, let's look at what Scott Ritter says in his book, Target Iran. He says, "Let there be no doubt. If there is an American war with Iran, it is a war that was made in Israel." And he states that members of the lobby, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, are guilty of dual loyalty, and he calls what we had called for 15 years ago, they should all be registered as foreign agents. But here is the, he calls himself a friend of Israel, and I think it's important that we understand what Jimmy Carter states. Jimmy Carter, in his book, is saying that he is indeed the most ardent friend of the Israeli state, and in opposing what he calls the potential apartheid, he doesn't talk about the denial to Palestinians of the right to own land or live on land or to have a job or share crop land without proving four generations of maternal Jewish descent. Let's be clear. This is the same Jimmy Carter who was the author of PD-18 and who supported the first Gulf War, and who was his national security advisor? Zbigniew Brzezinski. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is the architect, thank you very much, Mr. Carter, for the creation of the fundamentalists of Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, who is the author of the Grand Chessboard and the advocate of what was called the bear trap to draw the Soviet Union into Afghanistan in order to have a pretext for direct intervention. Mr. Zbigniew Brzezinski went on Charlie Rose to explicate the Carter book. And what did he state? He and Jimmy Carter are advocating a demilitarized Palestinian entity in the West Bank with all of the major population centers annexed to Israel and NATO occupying soldiers so that the Palestinians under the control of the NATO forces can deal with the militants and the activists and the restive population. Is there a difference here beyond tactics with this ruling class? What does Carter and the Democratic Party represent? Made in Israel, it may be, with the full bore support strategically of all wings of this ruling class. The lobby is an instrument of the ruling class itself. It's to terrorize the rest of us. It's to purchase the politicians, to keep them in line, and to shut up anybody who dares question the nature of imperialism and the role of the Zionist state. We have to be clear about these issues here. When they are in trouble and they want to point a finger at one wing or the other and have fall guys, are we going to buy into this? These are the very architects of the same policies. What is Brzezinski? What was Carter? What was the Gulf War? Let me give you a little sample. In the first 4 weeks of the aerial assault upon Iraq, the first Gulf War, supported by the Democratic Party, supported by Bush Sr., more tonnages were dropped than during the entire Second World War. Iraq, then a country of 17 million people, the ferocity of the saturation bombing of its major cities was of such intensity that the planes had to circle on hold, unable to find space in skies more congested than those over Los Angeles Airport to run their bombing patterns. The sorties followed every 15 minutes, 100,000 sorties. We cannot begin to describe the devastation that was inflicted on this country. And then the blockade that all wings of the class supported, Carter and Clinton among them, 1.6 million civilians killed in that blockade, according to the United Nations, 750,000 children, and they have the brass, what shall I call it, on Pacifica Radio, the audacity to point the finger at a wing of the class that's because they're in trouble now. They're all responsible, they're all engaged, they're all presenting the same damned scenario of fragmenting each of these countries in turn. It's only a question of picking and choosing amongst their victims.
And Ralph, control over resources. Let us be clear. At the root of this is control over resources. Who has hegemony over world resources? Remember, the U.S. uses much of these resources, and it is much cheaper to get the oil from places throughout the world than it is to take it from the heavy shale that exists within the United States.
Well, I mean, George Shultz spelled it out. In fact, every single spokesperson for big capital and banking and oil with the Democratic Party figures on board, the national security advisors for John Kerry were on the board of Chevron, were engaged with Condoleezza Rice. The targeting of Middle Eastern oil was a shared project, both parties in all wings of the class.
And the oil of Iran is used in Europe. And now, with the rise of China as an economic force, let's look at the relationship that has developed between China and Iran. March of 2004, China signed a 25-year deal to import 110 million tons of LNG, liquefied natural gas, from Iran. And China has also been signing a deal worth another $100 billion, importing 250 million tons of LNG from Iran over a 20-year period, and 150,000 barrels of crude oil per day during a 25-year period. So China is becoming a major economic force with Iran. China is going to invest huge amounts of money in Iran's oil and gas fields, money that is much needed in Iran for exploration and drilling, and this amounts to $100 billion over 25 years. So this is an important relationship. Also, the relationship between Russia and Iran. It is Russia that is building the atomic power plants, the civilian atomic power plants. An important article appeared in the Los Angeles Times by the excellent writer Kim Murphy. U.S. puts the squeeze on Iran's oil fields. A campaign to dry up financing for projects poses a threat to Tehran's ability to maintain exports. Now, if you look at the relationship between Iran and China and Iran and Russia, you can see the importance of the investment in these oil fields, the significance of the Chinese commitment to invest in the oil fields of Iran. So what the international finance groups have been doing is trying to put the squeeze on money sources to Iran. Iran's oil industry, writes Kim Murphy, has raked in record amounts of cash during 3 years of high oil prices. But a new U.S. campaign to dry up financing for oil and natural gas development poses a threat to the Republic's ability to continue exporting oil over the next two decades. And this is bypassing the relationship with China. There's been a squeeze on China, the U.S. pressuring China, saying that China was providing Iran with equipment necessary for the nuclear power industry, which the U.S. said was to make nuclear weapons. If Iran were to stop exporting its 2.6 million barrels of oil a day, such as in the event of a military strike, Murphy notes, world oil prices probably would skyrocket. But a gradual decline might be offset by other OPEC members, particularly as Iraq increases its oil production and Saudi Arabia carries out plans for significant increases in production capacity. And that is why Murphy notes that over the past few months, the U.S. has been trying to persuade international banks and oil companies to pull out of Iran, to threaten dozens of projects, including the development of Iran's two massive new oil fields that could expand output by 800,000 barrels a day over the next 4 years. Many European banks, which had accepted financing some oil industry projects, have recently canceled them.
Maya, let me just remind our listeners, Mr. Brzezinski engineered the attack on Iran by Saddam Hussein. Zbigniew Brzezinski, on behalf of Jimmy Carter, met with Saddam and King Fahd of Saudi Arabia in Sabah of Kuwait, in Kuwait, to engineer an attack on Iran to amputate the oil-producing province of Iran after the Iranian Revolution. We have to be clear, brothers and sisters, about the nature of this ruling class, the divisions about tactics and strategies, only about who's winning and who's losing at a particular given undertaking. I mean by winning and losing tactically. Here's the Jerusalem Post. Nothing if not explicit. Democrats, nuclear Iran, unacceptable. Iran with nuclear weapons is unacceptable. New House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer told the Jerusalem Post hours after entering the party leadership position. The Maryland Democrat said the view is shared by his party, rejecting assertions that the Democrats are weaker than the Republicans on Iran. He spoke to the Jerusalem Post on Thursday, the opening day of the 110th Congress. Hoyer said the Democrats' position was that preventing a nuclear armed Iran had to be accomplished, and he would not take the use of force, quote, off the table. I have not ruled that out. I have not ruled that out. There's nothing ambiguous about this. Second carrier group sought for Gulf region, seen as warning to Syria and Iran, reports the Boston Globe. The U.S. command responsible for Middle East operation has asked the Pentagon to add a second aircraft carrier to the Gulf as a warning to Syria and Iran and to help it carry out other operations. We want to understand the escalation that's being prepared in Iraq? Other operations indeed. Meet the WAC Iran lobby, writes Daniel Shulman in Mother Jones. Abraham Sholsky, the Pentagon's Iran Lobby Office of Special Plans. Laura Rosen reported in the Los Angeles Times that Sholsky, along with top OSP staffers John Triglio and Leighton Archin, is involved with the Pentagon's Iran Directorate, and the office has become a conduit for the arms dealer, former Iran-Contra specialist Manuka Garbanafar, an Iran-Contra figure whom the CIA itself had labeled a fabricator as far back as 1984. Daniel Shulman, Abraham, Elizabeth Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney, David Worms, Elliot Abrams, Michael Ledeen. This is the whole apparatus of the neocons indeed, but conjoined through George Shultz and Bush Sr. Look, the Committee on the Present Danger, which is constantly being presented as a Zionist Likud apparatus, which indeed it is, was formed in 1950. George Shultz in 1976, a key figure. Again in 2004, Senators Joe Lieberman and John Keel are honorary co-chairs. The Democratic Party is up to its eyeballs in all of this and continues to be whack Iran lobby indeed. And the United Kingdom's Foreign Secretary, Margaret Beckett, reports in their Jerusalem Post that this is Iran's moment of choice, that sanctions are not enough, that their secret facilities have to be taken out. Jerusalem Post is the vehicle, but who is the mouthpiece? It's the Foreign Minister of Great Britain. Is Bush's war winding down or heating up? The coming attack on Iran, writes Paul Craig Roberts. And Paul Craig Roberts is very clear that this is what we have in store for us. But again, like Scott Ritter, it's the Zionist lobby. It's the neocon wing alone. But that it were, it's all sectors of the class, brothers and sisters, and they squabble about timing and a debate about who does what to whom. But what they're on board for is exploitation, permanent war, the direct seizure of oil, and the fragmentation of countries. And when they are wanting counter-revolution on the cheap, that means death squads redux. That means assassinations and coups d'etat. The Bush senior people, when they devastated Iraq during the first Gulf War, with the introduction of bacteriological agents in the old world screwworm and depleted uranium that created an epidemic of thalidomide-like deformities among infants across the Iraq, when they devastated the entire health and food distribution and sanitary infrastructure of that society, an absolute more tonnages than in the entire World War II theaters, all theaters, and visited upon this small country, and you're going to look to the likes of Bush Sr. and James Baker and Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski as a what? An anti-war alternative in the Middle East? Give me a break.
Ralph, if we go back to see the two-pronged strategy, we see that we have the Israelis threatening nuclear airstrikes against Iran. And we have, through the finance companies, through the banks, the international banks, and through the oil companies that have been doing business, the international oil companies that have been doing business with Iran, we have pressure placed upon them to pull back from their investments in Iran. And deep pressure is being put on the Chinese in particular. as I mentioned before, the 25-year project of China with Iran, and also a $16 billion project to develop Iran's North Pars gas field and the development of the Yadavarian field in southwestern Iran, which could boost production by 300,000 barrels a day. Iran's aging oil fields have never recovered from the damage during the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s. As you have always talked about, Brzezinski saying, bleed, was it Brzezinski who said, bleed them both white?
No, it was actually Kissinger.
Kissinger, that's right.
This was after the Iranian working class resisted the Iraqi invasion that was financed by the feudal regimes of the Gulf, and the biological and chemical and massive armaments were supplied by the United States to Saddam Hussein. And when the Iranian workers resisted, particularly in the oil-producing province of Khuzestan, Kissinger's mantra was, bleed them both white. And now your Zionists actually were giving arms to Khomeini while the United States was arming Saddam Hussein. And over 1 million people died in that conflict. 1 million human beings died. Thank you, Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski, for God's sake.
So let's look at what's going on in Iran, because part of the strategy has been, as it was in Iraq, to find a surrogate, to find it, some group that can replace the existing power. And that is done through now a new group in the United States that the Boston Globe wrote about extensively on January 2nd, and that is the Iran-Syria Policy and Operations Group, or ISOG, members of whom you were describing from the Mother Jones piece, including some of the neocons and the people from the Bush-Baker cabal. And what we have also is the recognition, and this is where the financing comes in that is so well described in the Kim Murphy piece in the LA Times, that Iran's oil fields are aging and need large investments. As Mona Shirtakin, a former Iranian petroleum geologist who's a senior analyst for the Center for Global Energy Studies in London, stated explicitly, quote, you need billions of dollars invested in order to stand still. That's in order to stand still, to avoid a decline, and that's not even to move forward. Increased output from refinery construction is being outpaced by the swelling number of young Iranians who are driving cars. And in Iran, you have a heavily subsidized gasoline at 35 cents a gallon, and you have the most extensive residential heating infrastructure in the world.
Oh, how exploitative they are. They charge their people 35 cents a gallon for gasoline. And here we have this wonderful capitalist ruling class in the United States wants to gouge our poor and is demonizing this Iranian regime that charges its population 35 cents a gallon.
And as well, heat. And the LA Times points out that even in remote villages that we here in the United States would consider where there are primitive living conditions, the homes are heated in Iran and the government subsidizes the heat. So instead of having people, elderly people and poor people dying during the winter, as you have in Chicago and other major cities in the United States.
400,000 calls a week in New York during winter from people without running water, electricity, and heat.
You have the Iranian government subsidizing energy for the population. And Takin points out that the subsidy amounts to $20 to $30 billion a year. That's 15% of Iran's GDP. Now, for the capitalist mind, that is a problem because they say that money should be going into the investment. The nub of the problem, according to Hossein Askari, professor of international business at George Washington University, is that if you were to cut the subsidies, I think there would be riots in the street. That, according to them, that is to the capitalist professors, that the Iranian government has diverted billions of dollars in oil revenue to social welfare programs, major infrastructure building programs in Afghanistan, and the importation of consumer products. Now, what is the money for, if not for social welfare programs and infrastructure programs and the importation of consumer products? In other words, the oil wealth of Iran is being returned to the Iranian people. Ralph, Maya, conclude.
Maya, the important piece you cite by Sarah Stockman in the Boston Globe sets out who is the ISOG, who are the people involved. It's the Iraq Policy and Operations Group, as you say, but it bridges the neocons, it bridges the Zionist apparatus, and it does as well the Middle East Policy Chairman James F. Jeffrey, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. It is five main pillars or working groups. And indeed, Hillen and an Assistant Secretary of Defense Peter Rodman, it's the entire apparatus. We are going to be addressing next week the escalation in Iraq. But I want to cite, as we conclude today, the important piece in the DEPCA, which is the Israeli Intelligence Service communications, Bush poised to stake his all on Iraq victory. Poised to stake every U.S. resource to hand on a no-holds-barred military operation all the way to victory in Iraq after first bringing Baghdad under control. And indeed, Joseph Lieberman and John McCain have told us that there are going to be a very large increase in casualties, the death toll on the amongst American troops, not to mention the utter devastation in Baghdad and Anbar province that is promised us, is but the little beginning. That's the rationale for Admiral William J. Fallon, the Supreme Commander in the Pacific Theater, taking over for Abizaid as Commander of the U.S. Central Command. That's the reason why they are sending the second carrier in 4 months to the Persian Gulf. The USS John C. Stennis is a strike force heading for the Persian Gulf with a huge armory of 9 to 10 fighter bomber squadrons. And another task force, the USS Ronald Reagan Strike Group, ordered out of San Diego on January 4th for the same purpose. You hear a peep out of the Democrats about this. That's what's in store, brothers and sisters, upping the ante in Iraq, many more U.S. soldiers to die, devastation for the Iraqi population, and the beginnings of preparations for what may indeed be a nuclear attack on Iran. It is a criminal ruling class, every element of it, all components of it, whatever their tactics, brothers and sisters, prepare to resist them. We'll be with you again next week.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Upping the Ante in Iraq and Iran. Our program was recorded January 8, 2007. It will be on our archive, www.takingaimradio.com, and on the WBAA archive at www.wbai.org. We'll be with you next week. Tatam ta chinda ta ro tatam ta filo ndokh ni wala ngame.